You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, this is Dave Hodges, and I'm sorry I couldn't be with you this evening, but the show is in great hands with my friends Doug and Joe Hagman, who host the best show on radio right here on Global Star Radio Network, and their show airs, as you know, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, in the same way you're listening to me right now. You can listen to Doug and Joe and their great list of guests. The show is brought to you by a number of people that make this broadcast popular. First of all, let me tell you about my good friend Steve Quayle, who is converting useless cash, or soon to be useless cash, into precious metals. And you know the devaluation's coming. You know the feds are raising the interest rates. You know the deep state is not going to allow Donald Trump to go through with these reforms without trying to collapse the economy first. Don't get caught off guard here. Let Steve help you out. You've got discretionary money. Go to Steve Quayle at Precious Metals, Renaissance Precious Metals, I should say, and I want you to give him a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Again, that's 406-586-4842, and tell them Dave Hodges sent you. We're also brought to you by Ready Made Resources and my good friend Bob Griswold. And Bob is at the forefront of getting you ready for anything that you want in terms of prepping. All your prepping needs are right there at your fingertips. Simply go to readymaderesources.com. The phone number is there on the website. You can look at a fine product line, everything from night vision to communications to water filtration. Bob has it all. Again, that's readymaderesources.com. Well, you know, in the upcoming times, you're going to need food, water, guns, gold, and ammo at minimum. Well, we can help you with the food. Best storable food company in the world is Numana. Mike Adams from the Health Ranger has done a comparison test between Numana and all the other competitors, and Numana wins on every single dimension. Find out why. Go to the website at numana.com/Hodges. Also, I think you're going to find you're going to really, really like what we're doing here with Numana, because we're giving you 5% off your purchase price. Simply use the coupon code Hodges, NOV5. Also, the Be Candid app. You know I love this. Oh, do I love Be Candid. Why? Because you don't want to end up like me and be denied employment because you have political views that don't agree with the loony left. Well, I've got a page on BeCandid.com, the Common Sense Show, as you might expect, and we're getting all kinds of people signing up, and I think you're going to really like what happens there. You can be totally anonymous. And I know you might be a year or two away from retirement. You got a boss that's more liberal than Hillary Clinton. There could be a number of reasons why. Simply go to any of your Play Stores, like Google Play Store, download the Be Candid app. It's free. You can use any moniker that you want. Just don't use your own name, because that kind of defeats the purpose. And we'll be right there. Go to the Common Sense Show and sign up for my page. Again, that's becandid.com. Love it. You don't want to miss it. It's really, really terrific. Also, we're sponsored by TradeGenius.co. My good friend Bob Kudla, really, really knowledgeable man in terms of helping people through the tough times economically. He's a great financial expert, good financial advisor. And find out why. People just don't leave this guy. They sign up and they stick to him for life. TradeGenius.co. Anyway, that's it for the sponsors. Let me return you to my good friends, Doug and Joe Hagman of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Anyway, Doug and Joe, thanks so much for covering for me.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of The Common Sense Show. Joe and Doug Hagman here, guest hosting for Dave Hodges as he takes a well-deserved evening off. We have this hour Josh Kaplan from VesselNews.io. That's VesselNews.io. And we're going to talk about a number of important stories, from what has been going on, the warmongering with North Korea. Also front and center in the news today, Judge Derek Watson has denied a request limiting the scope of the ban that he issued as a federal judge on Trump's immigration executive order. We also have the Secret Service issues, as there have been three breaches of security or attempted breaches of security at the White House, one for 15 to 17 minutes as a man was on the White House grounds jumping a number of fences, triggering multiple alarms, and what was the reason for the delayed response. Another interesting headline, Trump cuts the U.S. debt by $100 billion in his time as president so far, and much, much more. Without any more delay, we're going to bring on Josh Kaplan. Again, his website is VesselNews.io.
And follow him on Twitter as well.
Yeah,
Vessel News on Twitter at Vessel VESSEL News.
Yeah, .io. Josh, welcome to the Common Sense Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, so, I think Dave Hodges would approve, by the way. So, anyway.
Yeah, we were talking off air. A good place to start, something that's front and center in the news, is North Korea. There's a lot of saber rattling going on. I believe North Korea said today if one single bullet is fired, they're going to launch a nuclear attack on the U.S.
So what's this 4'9" Chia pet with glasses and a nuke? You know, what's he up to?
Well, North Korea has been a thorn in the side not only of the American government, but their closest supposed ally, China. As you had stated earlier, that North Korea has threatened to, if the United States fires one single bullet, to obliterate the United States with a nuclear bomb. I think what's happening right now is North Korea is at a endgame point, meaning that Kim Jong-un is likely no longer in control over his own regime, as earlier reports have stated. And with a lesser likely ally, China, propping up the regime, having recently cut off business with North Korea with coal. They're no longer importing coal from North Korea. A large part of their finances has now been choked by their neighbor. So what you're seeing now is to me, a regime on its last legs. And as we were talking off air, I think one of the interesting things that's going to occur from this collapse is the refugee crisis that I think will outweigh numerically, and also just from a sheer impact perspective of how it's going to change the makeup of, you know, a homogeneous China, is this refugee crisis of millions and millions of North Koreans flooding China, and how the Chinese are then going to deal with mass migration. If you look at a report by the UN High Commissioner for Refugees out of Beijing, in 2005, China only took 9 refugees and 26 asylum seekers from Syria. And there was less than 800 UN-registered person of concerns that were coming from Somalia, Nigeria, Iraq, and so on into China and allowed to live there. So taking in refugees is not something that the Beijing government has as a stringent policy that they enforce. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they deal with this. And the context of this all is that, of course, Trump has been demonized by the mainstream media in regards to how he's acted towards to refugees and the issues that he's having with his travel ban and wanting to uphold the rule of law and make sure that we have a legal immigration system that's operational and allows people into the country legally. It's going to be very interesting how they're covering this North Korean refugee crisis, because whatever the Chinese are going to do, it's going to be far less humane than anything that Donald Trump could do on his worst day. And the mainstream media will then have to contextualize this, showing Donald Trump as the infinitely more moral, just, rational, and efficient person in terms of executing a immigration policy, contrasted against a imminently disastrous, brutal, and messy refugee policy as we have millions of North Koreans flooding into the country.
Interesting take on that. All right. Well, before we get to this, if I can take a step backward here, let's just take the headline at its face. And it's interesting how you approach this from the refugee standpoint. I understand that, but taking this at its face, if a single bullet is fired, we will nuke the United States. Now, I look at that, and by the way, this headline is, if you go to vesselnews.io, that's V like Victor, E-S-S-E-L, news.io, which we've got bookmarked and we follow every day. Tell us about that headline. If a single bullet is fired, we will nuke the U.S. Is that even possible? Is that hyperbole? Is that rhetoric? Is that, or could they in fact do something that on mainland U.S., or is this a reference to South Korea or Japan or our assets elsewhere?
It could be assets elsewhere. It could be our base in Japan, or it could be an American outpost that's in the DMZ zone. There's tens of thousands of troops lined up in South Korea facing their neighbor to the north. So it could be assets both in South Korea and Japan. But we really don't know the capacity of their nuclear arsenal and even how large it is for that matter. So what we see here is a game of cat and mouse with an opponent to which we don't even understand what their full capability is. And I don't even think the North Koreans fully understand how equipped their nuclear arsenal is. There have been numerous reports in the past where failed tests have occurred. So it's not even certain whether or not if they were to attempt to fire a nuclear weapon in any direction, that it would go far enough to strike our assets. So that within itself is something to consider, whether or not they actually have the capacity. In addition to that, what you're seeing right now, as I stated before, an endgame point in which they're at. They're out of fiery rhetoric. There's really nothing more that they could possibly say that would be any more shocking than this statement. If the Americans want to, you know, lift one finger, shoot one bullet, that they're going to nuke the U.S. or their assets. What's interesting about this is that the Americans nonetheless have been preparing for a potential strike by the North Koreans in a variety of different ways. Just this week, we curated a story on vesselnews.io about jungle warfare drills being undertaken on the island of Hawaii. So while there may not have been preparations for a nuclear strike, the American military is preparing for some type of warfare to occur on the Hawaiian island, which is the closest, geographically, is the closest piece of American soil to the North Koreans. In addition to that, there have been numerous reports of missile test launches out of California, potentially either to strike the North Koreans in retaliation or preemptively, or to then shoot down a missile that may come our way. So the Americans are certainly preparing both on the ground and in the sky, both in Hawaii and California, for a potential strike. And the question is, who's going to pull the trigger if a trigger is pulled?
Interesting you mentioned that. I'm just, as you were saying that, I was just thinking of Dave Hodges. Here he is, you know, surfing on Maui or something, and all of a sudden he sees this invasion of North Koreans, and he's thinking, you know, just my luck, right? Anyway, aside.
The U.S. and South Korea are in the middle of military drills in South Korea that I believe has something to do with, you know, in the last few weeks we've seen North Korea pop up in the news as their leader continues to make these statements and these threats, and I know that he had some concern about the military drills. And then, Josh, I don't know if you have an answer for this, but we know that North Korea has nuclear capabilities. Do they have the capability to actually launch a nuclear warhead?
Didn't we find one of their missiles on the Alaskan mainland here a couple of years ago?
We don't know what their capacity is, and I'm not even certain that the upper echelons of the North Korean regime understand what their true capacity is. I think if it came down to Kim Jong-un giving the order to fire a nuclear weapon at an American asset or on our soil, that they could have any level of confidence that it would actually hit. So that's really, I think, it's a tough question, I think, for even top analysts that have been studying North Korean military history for quite some time. One of the things that I think a lot of people are thinking about is this just a cyclical process that the North Koreans undertake, where every time there's high-level military drills between the South Koreans and the American military, that there seems to be a cycle where the North Koreans ratchet up their rhetoric. But now, in addition to these drills being undertaken by both the Americans and the South Koreans, for the first time in its history, the Japanese have done a civilian/military drill where they've had the Japanese citizenry, large swarms of it, go into bomb shelters and go under their desks in schools. I mean, this is like, you know, World War II type of stuff. And for a country that hasn't, that doesn't have an offensive military, constitutionally, they're not allowed to attack. This is a defense force, much like the IDF. And this is enshrined in their constitution, despite Abe's, efforts to try to reverse that. There seems to be more heat around this issue than ever before, despite this being somewhat of a cyclical process where when drills occur, there seems to be increased ratcheted levels of rhetoric and missile launches and military drills from the North Koreans. So we're not sure what their capacity is, but this issue seems to be more of a tinderbox than ever. Not only by the rhetoric, but also by what the precautionary measures of the countries and the regions that are involved and how they're dealing with it.
And just to reiterate the point I was making earlier, the drills that are going on in South Korea you have exercise Full Eagle, FOAL Eagle, and Key Resolve. You also had some U.S. bombers fly over North Korea. This was about a week ago, I believe, as Trump was sending a message to the leader of North Korea there to let him know that he's not going to be able to just continue to make threats. And you mentioned this, Josh, about this cycle. It seems that every time there is a military drill or North Korea's name is brought up in the American media, that he'll we threaten him after he attempts to test a missile. That, they make these outlandish claims. And we've seen the saber rattling between North Korea and the U.S. for a long time now. And, it remains just as words, not as any actions. Is there anything that indicates that this time might be different as far as the rhetoric versus taking action?
Well, yeah, why not?
The timing, I think, after for so long operating as the Hermit Kingdom on handouts, much of which from the United States has propped up the North Korean regime for decades, I think something just has to give. In addition to that, I think that the North Koreans are faced with an American administration that, from a foreign policy standpoint, will be its strongest since Reagan. So there seems to be a great fear from the North Koreans that requires them to saber rattle like never before to send a message to Trump, because Trump is in many regards a strong man that has a strong foreign policy, and it's going to require that type of mentality to show Trump that, hey, they're not going to be pushed over. So the level of posturing actually has very much to do with how strong a foreign policy prescription that Donald Trump has. In addition to that, and you had alluded to this earlier, Joe, which was, now we're starting to see American apparatus being shipped to the region that we hadn't seen previously, right? We had the THAAD anti-missile cruisers being shipped in that direction. We had the bombers that were flying over the region. And then in addition to that, we see that there are American drones that are being sent there as well that have the capacity to shoot ammo. So now you're seeing the rhetoric, but you're also seeing the apparatus being sent there. So it's coupled with hot rhetoric with actual firepower. And I think that this is a dangerous game of chicken where let's see who could bring more apparatus to the table, coupling that with rhetoric first. And we don't, again, we don't know where this is going to land up. I mean, this is a Soviet style, regime where they want to get as much as they can out of their allies and their foes, through heated rhetoric, and then it decreases and they come to the table, and then the North Koreans say, well, if we get X amount of dollars, we'll scale back our nuclear ambitions, just like we saw previous negotiations with the, you know, P5 plus one, right, where we have China and Russia and the United States and some European powers and North Korea and involved in these negotiations. So previously we've seen this rhetoric being ratcheted up, and it decreases, and then there's some negotiation where there's financial payment involved and lifting of sanctions, and everything goes back to as normal a situation as you could have with such a regime. So we're not really sure where this is going to go, but it's different because now we're seeing American firepower being sent quickly, and a lot of it, and in different forms that are devastating if actually utilized.
Okay, and let me ask you this: as we're still talking about North Korea, say there is some kind of conflict between the U.S. and North Korea, what do you believe China's role will be? We know that they're North Korea is a proxy for China. I don't know if you call them an ally or whatever, but many people are speculating that this would draw China in, and other people are saying that, you know, China has too much to lose if North Korea was to go around and launch a preemptive strike, or this was to get into a heated conflict. What do you see China's role?
Well, at the very least, I think post-conflict, you'll see a very active Chinese military playing a peacekeeping role, very much like you see the American troops now playing at the DMZ zone between the North and South Koreans. So at the very least, I think you'll see a more involved Chinese military on that standpoint. The Chinese military has been boosting its spending in tandem with its explosive GDP over the past decade. And there was a report that we curated and we posted on VesselNews.io where for the South Morning Chinese Post, where the Chinese military is now boosting their Marine Corps by 400%. So look for a China that is going to be expansive in its approach, not only capacity-wise, but how it operates on the global stage. So I foresee a China, I think philosophically, that is very much open to engaging in a military conflict with the United States, seeing as though they're making massive investments in human capital during a time whereby American military power globally is moving towards drones and laser guns and space war and cyber war. And, you know, you're seeing less and less people sign up to be Marines, and we're seeing now a shift in resources and focus to try to bolster military assets from a technological standpoint. So I think that the Chinese would likely get involved in a military conflict head on with the United States if they saw that it suited their interests. So this could be this could escalate quickly, and it could be very, very scary. This is the doomsday scenario, a face-off between the United States and China. And, of course, there is so much at stake when these two nations go head-to-head, whether it be, you know, from a trade standpoint. I mean, just the sheer amount, the trillions of dollars of T-bills that the Chinese government owns is quite a scary thought to see these two countries at play. But On a positive note, I don't want to sound too doomsday about this. Secretary Tillerson is wrapping up his trip in Asia. A large degree of it, for my analysis, has been fruitful. He met with Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, and Xi Jinping gave him very warm parting words, saying that it is his deep desire to work alongside the United States. And with the oftentimes terse rhetoric of the president towards China, especially in his tweet this weekend, stating that the Chinese have done very little, to paraphrase the president, in regards to helping better the North Korean situation, I think you're gonna see a high likelihood that this doesn't escalate, not necessarily that there isn't some type of skirmish between the North Koreans and Americans. I think that's very well possible, but I don't foresee there being motivation from either side to want to engage the Chinese and Americans in a war. But if need be, I think that the Chinese would be willing, because they're making investments in that area, to do so.
Okay.
Wow. I know you said leaving on kind of talking on a high note there, looking at this just from a practical point of view, to me, I've always seen the North Korean regime unpredictable, and as you point out, it's kind of chaotic, I suppose, right? No one knows what anyone's doing over there, in a sense.
No, they really don't, and I've traveled to North Korea.
Right.
We've had previous discussions about this. I had an interesting vacation choice a few New Year's Eves ago, where I had an opportunity. I was told, I cannot confirm this, that it was one of the first times, if not the first time, that the North Korean government allowed for Westerners to visit the Hermit Kingdom during the New Year's Eve time frame. So think around Christmas break, that time frame. So I had a little bit of time off. I jumped on the opportunity, took a flight from Montreal to New York to Helsinki to Beijing to Pyongyang. So a very quick trip over a couple days just to get there, and spent a few days there. So everything is so guarded, and you have so many people watching you at all times, and they tell you, you know, the rooms are bugged and the bathrooms are bugged and everything is bugged and you have to be careful. And when you're in the mausoleum where Kim Il-sung's body and Kim Jong Il's body are held, you must operate with the most, you know, respect possible, and bow at his body at every chance. So there's so much mystery and mystique around this country. We don't necessarily know how the North Koreans are going to act, and I think the Americans have no choice but just to prepare themselves for the worst, which I think that they've done. This is a situation that I think the world is watching very, very closely because of how unpredictable it is and the implications of a potentially nuclear country that has long-distance striking capacity to the United States or assets within Asia could be highly consequential. So we'll all have to watch with great interest.
And absolutely. I think that we should have, I think really the history behind the Korean War or police action, you know, as it's described. I mean, I really think that schools need to be teaching the accurate history of the Korean War, you know, post-World War II, what happened in Korea and the players there, to really understand the current day environment. But,
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
folks, we're talking with Josh Kaplan. His website is vesselnews.io. That's vesselnews.io. We got,
by the way, we're sitting in for Dave Hodges.
Yes. We got about 24 minutes left, 25 minutes left. Want to kind of run through some of the news with you, Josh. Azira, a news analyst. Another article I see on your site. Intel chairman confirms there is no collusion between Trump and Russia. This Russian narrative that has continued
how
to be
dare you how dare you say that
pushed and on the people and the lies that they continue to spew about this. Do you believe, even with the intel the information that's coming out, that there is no collusion between Trump and Russia, even though we've seen it a million times? Do you think that this will back some people off in the news media from continuing to push this false narrative, or do you believe that they'll continue to move full steam ahead?
Well, there was an interesting article from The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's publication, today where House Democrats, or I should say the Democratic leadership both in the House and the Senate, are quietly telling donors, grassroots organizations, and other members of the party that the likelihood of there being concrete evidence that would point towards collusion between the president of the United States and the Russian government is becoming more and more of a fantasy. And this is a very big story now that the party apparatchik is moving away from this slowly but surely, demonstrates a shift in that the things that they're going to try to pin on Donald Trump to try to smear him are becoming less and less. So I personally believe very strongly that there hasn't been any concrete or any real evidence that anybody could produce that there's collusion between the two sides. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, which even if there were evidence, I want to take the conversation elsewhere for a moment. I don't think that even if there was quote unquote concrete intel that there was collusion between the president and Russia, that we could even trust it, that it would even be factual. And the reason for that is that the Vault 7 leaks from WikiLeaks states very interestingly that there was a malware expert that Julian Assange had linked up with that stated that there are pieces of malware that the CIA has stolen from foreign governments like Russia and China and implanted them back on these governments so that they're framing them and pointing the finger at these governments, and it's done by the CIA. So even if there was evidence, supposed evidence between collusion of these two parties, we can't even fully trust it because we have evidence that now we know that the CIA has been taking, has stolen malware from Russia and China and put it back on our own system. So I can't even trust that there would be any collusion. So to me personally, this issue is dead. It's an old, you know, horse that's been beaten up. They tried to get Jeff Sessions to resign over this supposed Russian linkage that he met with a Russian ambassador, and it was just really, it was what it was, just like any other senator at the time, and currently is meeting with foreign ambassadors at all times. And the Washington Post story that had broke it actually had framed it incorrectly, because Senator Franken on the committee who had asked the question of then-Gen Jeff Sessions, had asked him whether or not he had met with a Russian official under the auspices of a political campaign discussion. Not have you met with him at all. So Jeff Sessions answered the question correctly, did the opposite of committing perjury, and was falsely accused by the mainstream media as lying. And this was just more shadiness and fog around this mystical connection between the president and the Russian government. So I think that this issue is slowly but surely going to die. It's on its last legs, as per the Intercept report. And as I just, you know, I mulled over, according to the Vault 7 leaks, we can't even verify that any potential future leaks connections are even real.
No, you're exactly right. And I hope you're correct that this is on its last leg. The story is on its last leg and it will die out. There's another article from Politico, and this just shows you the mental insanity. One of the Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee said there was circumstantial evidence of collusion between Trump and Russia. And this is what he went on to say. At the onset of the investigation, there was circumstantial evidence of collusion. There was direct evidence, I think, of deception. I don't want to prejudice where this will ultimately end up. And some say there's evidence. Another thing to say we can prove this, or prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, or there's enough evidence to bring a grand jury for the purposes of a criminal indictment, but there was certainly enough for us to conduct an investigation, and quote. You know, we I just I'm amazed at how these people in the media get away with, you know, continuing to push this narrative without any evidence. Even James Clapper came out and said that there was absolutely no evidence of anything going on. But the hypocrisy from the media, and I don't want to bring in the wiretapping story again, but, you know, they demand instant proof from a Trump tweet, but they continue to carry this lie for over 6 months about this Russian collusion where there's no evidence. It's just complete hypocrisy, and you know, people should be able to see it for what it is. But any and all costs, it seems like the Saul Alinsky tactics are being played out. And we know that with communism, as we see with the Obama administration, the communist socialist ties, that when they lose power, they're not going to go away quietly. They're going to continue to fight if they can't get the power back to disrupt the administration in current position of power to the point where nothing can be done. And I just don't see an end to this, but I hope you are right, because I think, aside from those who have bought into the lie, that everybody else just wants the story to go away because there is nothing to it.
If they would have paid this much attention to the Obama eligibility, his background, his passport, travels, his Columbia time,
or even the DHS's hacking of state electoral systems, you know, you want to talk about real attempted election hacking. The DHS was caught trying to hack into the computers of Georgia, of Tennessee, on multiple times during the election, and for the purposes of who knows what, but it was very nefarious. But you don't see, you know, these things being brought out in the media. You don't see Hillary Clinton's ties to Russia and John Podesta's ties to Russia being brought out in the media. It's just a witch hunt, and I think people are really getting sick and tired of it. At least I am, and I don't even want to talk about it anymore, but it just bothers me that every time I turn on any news, you know, it's one of the main talking points on the news stations, and there's much more important things to get into. But let's move on, Josh. Mm-hmm.
If I can throw out a question here, a story on VesselNews.io, and folks are talking with Josh Kaplan, VesselNews.io, VESSEL, News.io, on the Common Sense Show. There's an article here, because it's important because I believe this is in the venue in which we all operate. You, us, Dave Hodges. Michael Savage discusses assault and how his industry friends, in quotation marks, have abandoned him. I know it's kind of a TMZ kind of story or E type story, but really it's not, because it speaks to, in my view anyway, it speaks to the hostility and the environment in which we operate.
Yeah, this is one example of something that's been going on since Trump got elected in just about every city. You know, you can't even walk in certain cities with a Trump hat on or have a Trump bumper sticker on. The assaults at protests, the anti-Trump violence, it's been everywhere. And this is just another example.
Yeah, what are your thoughts, Josh, on this?
Well, Michael Savage, as per a Salon piece, which is no friend to Trump and his supporters, stated that Michael Savage was the godfather of Trumpomania. Before there was Trump, there was Michael Savage. Mr. Savage has been preaching borders, language, and culture since he came onto the radio over 25 years ago. The interesting thing that we see with this scenario is that there are few people on the right side of the aisle, as per the article on VesselNews.io, that are coming to the defense of Dr. Savage. We don't hear the Glenn Becks or the Mark Levins or the Rush Limbaughs coming to his defense. Only Alex Jones has done so. There have been some pieces from Aaron Klein of Breitbart, who is an associate of Dr. Savage. You have seen Polyzet, Laura Ingraham's outlet, post a story. But interestingly enough, if you read the text, specifically of the Polyzet piece, the way it's written, it says Michael Savage claims he was assaulted. And I think really where I'm trying to go with this is that we know that the left is vicious, violent, authoritarian, and will stop at absolutely nothing to silence every single one of us. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is how fractured we are on the right or within the truth-telling movement, which spans the political spectrum. We can't even coalesce around one of the loudest voices that we have, Dr. Savage, and support him full-throatedly when he is assaulted, sitting in a restaurant in San Francisco with his 12-year-old poodle. So to me, what I see, if I take a few step backs and I look at this picture, I see a vicious left wing going after a fractured right wing, and that concerns me because if our destiny is to take on the left and win, we have to be united. And we are not. To me, when I look at this story and I take a few steps back, I see typical leftist violence against right wingers, but I see a fractured right wing response. And this to me is worrying. This is very concerning.
And I was hoping that's where you'd go, because I see the same thing. And I will state this without any reservation. I do believe that the independent media needs to be the beacon of light for the so-called right. When I say right, political right, moral, spiritual right, whatever. But I think we, as the independent media, need to circle the wagons around Dr. Savage. Michael Savage and his poodle Teddy, because for obvious reasons, but it bothers me that the fracture of the right is so fractured. So sometimes the word schizophrenic comes to mind, but then that's maybe giving the right too much credit, but anyway, I think you're right. I'm glad you addressed it in that fashion. Yeah, absolutely, because this is war to me. This is absolute war,
ideological war, cultural war,
and physical. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah.
Josh, we got about 10 minutes left before the end of the hour. What is on your radar that we haven't covered, or what do you find going on that's really important that we should talk about?
Well, I would take the discussion in a different direction, move it away from foreign policy, politics, and culture, and talk about this epidemic of violent extreme incidents that are unfolding on Facebook Live. Streaming right now is the hot new thing, whether it be on Facebook Live, Periscope. And we're seeing now an explosion of violent acts, whether it be a young toddler in Southside Chicago being shot in the head on Facebook Live. Just the other day, a Tennessee man ignored higher commands from a police officer, tried to strike them one or two times with his vehicle, and then was shot and killed by a police officer, all of which was on Facebook Live. We saw two Dominican journalists last month being murdered while Facebook Live was on being streamed. So one of the things that I'm thinking about is, first of all, why is this happening? Why is there incredible violence that's being captured on live stream? And this just says to me, this proliferation, this specific technology, which we've seen Right Side Broadcasting bring about, trying to live stream all the Trump events. So I'm trying to ask myself, why is this happening? Well, this technology is really important. The other thing that I have, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about this, is it brings up ethical questions. Does Mark Zuckerberg censor those that are engaging in violent acts live as the live stream is happening? And what technology does he require? What algorithm does he need to deploy to be able to know when something's bad happening to shut it off? This is one of the things that I'm thinking about. It touches on violence, touches on technology, touches on censorship, touches on ethics. This is one of the things that I'm thinking about that's outside of the mainstream political discourse.
Yeah, from the suicides, there was a since Facebook Live has launched, there's been a number of people who have committed suicide while streaming on this Facebook Live. There have been streamed on this Facebook Live. There have been acts of violence. And you're right. Why?
But they're more worried about censoring hate speech from conservatives who care about borders, language, culture, who care about the integrity and morality of our country.
But you can't speak out here.
Why?
Why? I mean, we've had, you know, maybe because it is Facebook and people are thinking they're reaching more of an audience and have a bigger platform. I'm not sure. But why is this? Why is violence being drawn to this? Why are people using this mostly, to show acts of violence either to themselves or other people? It's a good question, and I think it just speaks to how screwed up our society is, how screwed up our culture is, and that this could be celebrated in any capacity by people.
Does that speak to our voyeuristic tendencies? Or on the other side, the 15 minutes of fame?
I think it certainly does, and to me the ethics around this is in regards to how Facebook responds to this is really the most interesting issue, because right now we know that there is, as you stated earlier, a proliferation of suicides that are taking place on Facebook Live for whatever reason. They want to have an audience while this takes place. So they're ignored, and in the real world, I suppose they want some attention online. So what ends up happening now is Facebook has launched an algorithm that will scrape your page and monitor your mental health. If they see that your personal profile demonstrates that you have depressive, suicidal, or just general gloomy content, whether it be your photos or what you're linking and so on and so forth, they will flag you in their database, so that if you go on Facebook Live, you're flagged. They're looking at you. They're making sure that you're not going to commit suicide or a violent act, because they want to shut it down right away. And what this means is that because the more we want to be out there and be seen, the more that these large technology firms have to develop algorithms to be able to control that. If you put yourself out there, they need to be able to control how you put yourself out there. So as much resources as they dedicate to give us a voice, there is an equal part to it in which if they need to, they have to be able to monitor, control, and influence the way that you're getting out there. So it's one of the ethical issues that spans a number of different topics. Like you said, it's screwed up culture. People want to get out there, they be famous, but there's also this ethical issue, freedom of speech and censorship, and then these draconian algorithms that are coming in, scraping your page and shutting you down if you're engaging in these violent acts on live stream. So it's one of the things that I'm thinking about. It's outside of the normal political discourse, and every time there's a story of something negative occurring on Facebook Live, we curate it, post it on VesselNews.io, and usually does, unfortunately, it does very well in terms of traffic. People want to see this sort of stuff. There's a real interest for this.
Yeah, and you do a great job of gathering news and important information on your site. Again, folks, we're talking with Josh Kaplan. His website is VesselNews.io. That's VesselNews.io. Make sure you bookmark his site and check it regularly. He is his site has been growing exponentially for a while now. We only have a few minutes left, Josh. You want to tell people how you got into this and what you what your goals are continuing to move forward?
Sure. So Vessel News is a one-man show. It's just myself. I've been running the website since July, so about 8 months or so, less than a year. And the idea of Vessel News is very simple. I've got close to 1,500 news sources from around the world in over 100 different languages, where I'm curating pieces of the article and reposting them fully cited and linked back to its original sources. I'm far too hesitant and humble to say it's like a Drudge Report, but that's what our readers and other people in the industry would describe it as. It's really a stomping ground for all things news that is breaking on a daily basis, that not only touches on right-wing politics, but also touches on other things that are affecting the culture, like technological innovation. We've got a lot of weird, strange news that that touches on a lot of sensibilities of people's more unique sides. And we also talk about things that we love in our everyday life, like food and entertainment. So it really is a robust website that I'm curating stories about 40 to 60 every day, spans many different interest areas. And because I'm curating the pieces, I'm able to get them out super fast. So if you want breaking news, vesselnews.io is your place, because we're doing it at rapid speeds. It's just myself, so it's the, you know, it's the most efficient newsroom in the world, as I'd like to think.
I think you've accomplished that objective. We certainly follow your news feed all of the time, and I would urge everyone to do that, because it's it is comparable to Drudge, but it's more comprehensive, if I can say that. It's got a lot more depth to it, whereas Drudge, I mean, Drudge is good. It's certainly got the width. It doesn't have the depth that yours does, and that's something to say. And you know, your investigations, the ones that you choose to drill down upon, certainly add additional dimension to what you're posting. So, I want to thank you for that, and thank you for coming on the Common Sense Show, ordinarily hosted by Dave Hodges, who's out. We want to thank him for the opportunity to sit in for him. Anything, what do you see happening? We got about 2 minutes left. This week, anything on your radar this week where you wouldn't be surprised to say, man, I kind of expected that. I mean, we've got the SCOTUS pick tomorrow, or SCOTUS hearings tomorrow. We've got so many things, you know, taking place this week. Anything in, you know, that you want to not predict, but, well, predict, if you will.
Well, I think all eyes are on the healthcare bill in the House. This process has been fascinating to watch. If you just look at how the media has defined this bill, those on the right call it Ryan Care. Trump earlier this week calls himself really an arbiter of the bill, which is, you know, somewhat of an endorsement. Mike Pence seems to be campaigning very fast for it. Rumor is that next Thursday there's going to be a vote in the House on this. Paul Ryan says that he's confident the votes are going to come in. You've got members of the Senate like Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and Ted Cruz that have been very vocal that Obamacare light, quote unquote, quote, won't pass. Ted Cruz today went on, I believe, Face the Nation, CBS, and stated he's been negotiating for 3 hours with the president's team in Mar-a-Lago this weekend. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this all plays out. And you've got guys like Tom Cotton saying that we should just kibosh the whole process and start over. So I'm really watching this very, very closely, because as we said before, you know, in the American conservative landscape, we see that there is a fractured movement in regards to how we responded to Dr. Savage's assault. We're seeing the same fractured Republican Party on Capitol Hill. So we're going to see how either these wounds are healed or continue to open in regards to this healthcare bill repeal and replace process.
Excellent. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. Are guest hosting for Dave Hodges on the Common Sense Show. And again, folks, our guest, Josh Kaplan, vesselnews.io. He's been a guest on our show several times, and we want to thank you for
always
taking your time out tonight and coming on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Stay
you
safe,
have a great evening.
Brother.
All right. Folks. When we come back, we are going to be joined by Stephen Menking from the Amateur Society, also on theobjective.com. That's his podcast, as well as the website. And he's a Christian economist, as well as a news analyst, and a very smart man. And we're going to get into some more important news and information and find out what is on his radar. So
and
don't go anywhere.
We do want to thank Bill McIntosh, Ocasa Media. Just thank you.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.